Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Did you know that St. Louis was once considered the coffee capital of the country? We'll talk about the region's coffee history a little bit later. But first, we'll say hello as a means of saying goodbye to one of St. Louis Public Radio's key leaders, editor Margie Freivogel. She's retiring at the close of business today, ending a long and distinguished journalistic career in St. Louis. She has seamlessly navigated the ongoing transition from traditional print journalism to journalism in the digital age and has helped shape that new landscape. For 3.5 decades, she was a reporter, Washington correspondent, and editor with Post-Dispatch. After leaving the Post, she founded the St. Louis Beacon, the online news organization that has since merged with St. Louis Public Radio, ushering in a new era in journalism. As editor here, she has watched the organization grow and thrive and led a team that has distinguished itself on many fronts with its coverage. Margie Freivogel, welcome.
Thanks, Don. It's a great way to end up my career.
Well, I hate to see it end, quite frankly. You've contributed so much to the journalistic community here in the city. I'm sorry to see you leaving us, but life must go on.
It does.
Has to be a bittersweet time for you?
Yes, it is. But I feel like it's so rare to be able to leave on my own terms, at my own time. It's just great, really.
Well, you say that, and people might not, understand what you're really saying there, because in today's world of journalism, particularly newspapers, not many people have that luxury of leaving on their own terms.
That's absolutely true, and also to leave feeling like the organization is thriving and growing and in good hands, that's just really rare.
This has really been a remarkable story, hasn't it, what's been happening here with you and the Beacon and St. Louis Public Radio?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very unusual, almost unique nationally, I think, but a model that a lot of other people are watching and picking up on.
What are you hearing? I mean, I've sensed, and others have too, that this is a template for, as you indicate, other places of the country. What have you been hearing from other people about it?
Well, a lot of people are interested in how we're doing this here, and the reason is that in many places, and especially metropolitan areas that are roughly the size of St. Louis, one of the most difficult things is to sustain really high-quality local news coverage. Newspapers are doing it, but their newsrooms are much smaller than they used to be. Commercial broadcast doesn't have the capacity to pick up the slack. And what we've done here is a truly multimedia news organization that's in a position to really serve people the way they want to be served.
This really has to be the way it's going. I mean, there's no denying it that the digital world is here and it's thriving, and you've got to be a part of it or you're missing the boat.
Absolutely, and it's transformational in ways that I think we still yet don't fully understand. But definitely the biggest changes that I've ever seen, and you know, maybe the biggest change since Gutenberg, really.
Well, that's quite a statement.
Yeah.
I mean, but how difficult a transition has it been for you personally? Because I hate to use this term, and unless I can very quickly think of another one, I'll just have to go with you, kind of old school. I mean, you go back to the days of the newspaper being the robust enterprise that it was, and now it's changed. So how difficult was that for you?
Yeah, well, when I first walked into the newsroom at the Post-Dispatch, there were spittoons on the floor and typewriters clacking. And it was a very different era. And there was a point at which I was kind of in a state of mourning that was passing and wasn't going to be the same. And then I realized that was kind of silly, and that the tools that are available now to do journalism and the means that that people have to communicate with each other are just far superior to what existed before. And once I reached that point, I just got very enthusiastic about building something new.
You mentioned the noise of a newsroom. I mean, I go back as far as you do, and perhaps a little farther. I walked out into the newsroom the other day, and everybody was busy, but it was absolutely silent.
Yeah.
You know, the wire machines weren't clacking, as you say, the typewriters weren't clacking. One of the things I've been interested in since the beginning of this has been the different the age difference between some members of our staff and others. We have a great group of young people who have come in who are very talented and keep very busy and very productive. And then we have an older group representing the era that we're talking about here. Blending these two, how difficult is that? Because young people come at things a little bit differently than we who are older.
Well, I think we all have a lot to learn from each other, and that's been really the joy of working here, is I think we've found a way to draw on the strengths of experience and tradition and the strengths of energy and knowledge and willingness to try new things and being digital natives. And I think what makes it work is that we understand we all have a lot to learn from each other, and we're all finding a way that doesn't already exist. We're forging a new path.
Could you in your wildest dreams 10, 15 years ago have ever thought that journalism would be where it is today?
No, never. Yeah. And at many points in my career, I thought I was kind of at a dead end or things hadn't worked out. And then somehow at the end, it all came together, and everything that I learned in different phases and both my successes and failures all were really valuable experiences to bring to this very last phase of my career.
Is it better today, do you think?
Well, definitely. I mean, it's better here, and I think there's the potential for journalism to be better in general than it ever has been. But the danger is finding a way to sustain the work and to sustain strong news organizations. It's great that everybody can be a contributor to the flow of information now, but there's definitely a value, in my opinion, in strong professional newsrooms with high standards. And sustaining those newsrooms is definitely in danger.
You know, you talk of public contribution to the overall effort. And we're certainly encouraging that here with our public insight networks and some of the things we're doing to encourage the public to become involved. But I think back to not too many years ago when there was something being talked about called public journalism. You remember that at the Post. I think the former editor, Clay Campbell, was that his name?
Cole Campbell.
Was a proponent of that. Didn't seem to work very well.
I was not a fan.
Well, why did that not work?
That was different. I think that was some of the principles are the same, and some of the principles are totally the same as traditional journalism, but I think it was a kind of being executed in an artificial fashion that didn't really work. What's happening now because of the technology is really a grassroots, ground-up change from the ground up, and that's what makes it different.
Well, what about filtering that information? Well, that is always one of the concerns that people raise, is that information coming from sources that we don't know. It's difficult to be certain that what is being told and what is being written is accurate and doesn't reflect an agenda of some sort.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of bad information out there, and it tends to outrun the good information sometimes. But to me, that's the real value of a strong newsroom, is that you can be a guide to good information. You can dig it up yourself. You can point to it. I mean, if you look back at our Ferguson coverage, what Kelsey Proud in particular was doing with our live blog was a constant sorting of reliable information from rumor and misinformation. It's difficult now because you can just be buried in bits of information, but finding what's really valuable, what you can trust, that's still a challenge.
We'll be talking with Kelsey one of these days soon on this program, because I want to learn more about how she went about doing that. But again, my issue would be, how do you filter that information? I mean, there was an awful lot of stuff coming out of Ferguson from any number of different people who did have agendas. How do you filter that?
Yeah, well, I think you have to get to know who the sources of information are, who's reliable, who's actually on the scene, who's got an agenda and what it is. But it was interesting there because some of the professional journalists who were out there were very reliable and very good, and some of them weren't. And some of the people who were citizens or participants in one way or another were very reliable and trustworthy, and some of them weren't. And I think she just learned by experience to sort the wheat from the chaff.
Well, she was going at it 24/7, I know.
She was
totally committed to
she
that
was.
Operation. Speaking of Ferguson, and again, I have to be careful the way I phrase this because people might misunderstand. There wasn't much good that came out of those first weeks and a couple of months in Ferguson. I mean, there's an awful lot of fallout that was damaging, disruptive, and we all know that story. But actually, Ferguson was good for St. Louis Public Radio.
Well, I think about it in terms of the community, and I think it laid bare a number of issues that had been festering for many years. And so it was painful. I think maybe that's what you mean by it being not good. It was painful to come to grips with those things. But if you were on the receiving end of injustices, I think it probably also felt right that it should be brought out into public view. And I think St. Louis is we're certainly not done addressing those issues. We've barely begun, but we're in a very different place than we were before Michael Brown was killed. Well, and I think that's been a very good thing.
Yeah, it caught a lot of people by surprise, and it shouldn't. And maybe we as journalists bear some blame for that, because the conditions that surfaced, if you will, or were brought to public attention through Michael Brown's death had been going on for a great many years, and everybody in that community knew that.
Yes, and yeah. I do think we bear responsibility for not making that clear to the broader community.
What I was getting at with regard to it's being a good thing for public radio, this was just after the merger had gotten going.
Yes.
And so it really enabled us to I say us, you and your staff in the newsroom, really to flex muscles and show what could be done and really put us on the map in this community.
Yeah, and I think we learned what could be done through this experience.
Yeah.
And we learned to the merger was going well, but we were really reborn as a newsroom through that experience. And we learned to trust each other, and we learned to live in the digital world in a different way than we had before.
I think of some of the young reporters, several of whom had just come to St. Louis, literally within days of Ferguson erupting, and having to really earn their stripes right from the get-go and jump into it with both feet, and did an outstanding job.
They really did. I remember we were having discussions about what kind of orientation we should do for them. And instead we just said, we need you.
Right.
And they went out and found their way, and they did a terrific job.
Yeah, we talked to Dori Biscarin yesterday about the incident in which she was caught in something that would resemble a crossfire without there actually being fire, and was taken in by a resident of that community who were watching what was going on a block away on television.
Yes.
Yeah, that was quite a moment in the whole process. We're talking with Margie Freivogel, who is retiring as editor here at St. Louis Public Radio. Today is her last day on the job. She begins a new life, effective about 5 o'clock this afternoon. We'll continue our conversation with her. If you'd like to wish her well, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or if you'd like to send a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation with Margie Freivogel, who is retiring today as editor here at St. Louis Public Radio after some 40 years in journalism. It's been a long time, and I know you've been reflective. You indicated that earlier. What are some of the highlights of your career? When you look back, what things jump out at you as being the important parts of that career?
Well, maybe a couple of different things. First of all, I think covering Ferguson has been definitely the most significant story that I've been involved in. The biggest story for our community, it really was an international story, and here we were right at the heart of it. And it just raised so many important things for people and was a big challenge to figure out how to cover the breaking news and how to cover those underlying issues at the same time. So that's definitely by far the biggest story I've been involved in. But I had a lot of interesting things to cover. I worked in the Washington Bureau of the Post-Dispatch for several years, and I was writing about the rise of women in politics really before very many people were paying much attention to that. And I remember being at the Democratic Convention one time, and somebody had organized a press availability for something like 8 women who were running for the Senate that year. And the only person who showed up to interview them was me. So I had 8 Senate candidates to myself. That was kind of fun. And another, highlight in my career really was that I was able in the Washington Bureau to share a job with my husband so that we could both work and raise our family at the same time. That was also pretty unusual for its times, probably be pretty unusual now.
Yeah. Of those 8 women, how many of them actually won the election?
I can't actually remember, but maybe 3 or 4 of them. Right. It was kind of before the big year of the woman in politics.
And now there are 20 in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
Speaking of politics, I have to bring this up. I'm anxious to and eager to get your response to what Donald Trump said the other night. Of course, he says so many things that are worthy of discussion or not worthy, depending on your point of view. But he talked about journalists and he says, "I hate him. I hate him. I'm not going to kill him, but I hate him." What would go through your mind when you hear somebody saying that?
Well, a number of things. I think sometimes we as journalists make the mistake of thinking if we've annoyed people, we've done our job. And yet you really can't look at it that way. And I imagine a lot of people would share his opinion, unfortunately. But on the other hand, I think it's the job of a journalist to be independent and to ask tough questions. And if that's the reason that he hates us, well, you know, that's too bad.
Well, it's his responsibility to answer those questions. We often don't get that kind of a response, do we? We have a call here from Creve Coeur. Let's bring Mark into the conversation. He wants to chat with Margie Feivogel, so let's do so. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I want. You spoke of the digital age and the crunch this puts on journalists as far as verification and truth-telling. I was also wondering, though, do you think it's the digital age is the end of long-form journalism? You know, I look back at A.J. Liebling, Joseph Mitchell, you know, guys that could, like, really wind out 3,000 words and really cover a subject. You know, you look at the web magazines and things that are, like, you know, the short pieces required in the submission paragraphs, it always says has to be under 600 words, and I'm all for brevity, but I'm wondering, can you really ever get back to the kind of things that were done in the glory days of the past?
Well, I don't think that the digital age means the end of long-form substantive work. It does mean we can't bore people anymore and expect them to hang around. There used to be sort of a monopoly on the distribution of information, and people could take it or leave it. Now they have lots of options, and you have to be aware of that. But the trick is, we talk about this here a lot, the trick is how to present in-depth, really substantive coverage in a way that it is going to connect with people and that they can get into it and remain interested in it. And I think some people just abandon the field and say nothing long, and that's really not the answer.
I submit myself to a lot of, you know, magazines and journals, and if you wanted to run a 3,000 or 4,000 word piece and you know that they're saying formally, we don't want anything over 2,000. Would you just go ahead and boldly say, "Look, I'm sorry, it's over your limits. We'll take a look at it anyway," or you know?
No, because they're probably not going to.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you can break it into 2 pieces, you know, figure out some other way that it just is more than one long block of text.
No, I'm not even that wordy. It's just that I've noticed things seem to get shorter and shorter on the submission guidelines.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they, you know, the stringers and the freelancers, you know, can handle that. Like, I'll let you go. You got other people in the queue. Thanks a whole lot.
Mark, thank you so much for the call. Have you seen the movie Spotlight yet?
I have not seen it yet. Yeah. I've heard a lot about it. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Spotlight is the story of the Boston Globe investigation of the Archdiocese in Boston during the sexual abuse period there that was so well publicized later as a result of this investigation. But when I watched it, I was saying to myself, you know, are newspapers going to be able to do this sort of thing, or can they do this sort of thing in the future? This goes back 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Well, it's a very important question because that took months and months and months of work before they ever published anything.
And it was a designated unit to do just that sort of thing.
Yes. And that requires a huge amount of resources to do that. And at that time, the Boston Globe was in good shape financially and had a huge staff. And there are a lot of pressures that make that difficult now, although you also have the rise of a number of nonprofit news organizations that are dedicated to investigative coverage, and they're doing pretty well.
Outfits like ProPublica and organizations like that. You know, it's the Internet is pretty much blamed for the demise to this extent of the newspapers or the fact that they're not doing as well as they once did. And yet here we are now, you, a former newspaper reporter, working so closely with the Internet in the digital age, which killed your former business, basically.
Well, in a sense, yes. Yeah. The business model totally shifted, and that's what has put a lot of pressure on newspapers. But it also opens up opportunities. You can distribute your work for essentially nothing.
Yeah, and Mark was talking about volume and the length of you can put stuff out there as long as you want it to be,
and it's also there for whenever anybody gets interested in it.
That's right, at any time. We have an email here, a tweet, I guess, from Linda Locke. That's a familiar name, isn't it?
It is.
All right, ask Margie whether radio journalism differs from print in 2015, and how she expects it to evolve.
Yeah. Well, definitely there are two different forms. What makes a great radio piece, and this I've come to appreciate more and more the longer I've been here at St. Louis Public Radio, what makes a great radio piece is not what makes a great print piece or what makes a great web presentation. Each medium has its own demands. But at the core of all of them is great reporting. You have to really understand the subject, and you have to be able to tell the story in a way that connects with people. And so there's a commonality there. What's different about our newsroom is that our reporters work in all of those different media. But then their work comes out of the same core of understanding of their subject matter.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder, we're a radio station with a website or a website with a radio station.
Yeah, we're both.
we certainly are.
Depends on who you are, what you think we are.
Better leave that right there, Margie. Here we have an email from Betsy Bruce. Former colleague of mine, and I know you know Betsy well.
Of course.
Best wishes to Margie. I've always admired your work and your leadership. Betsy Bruce at Fox 2.
Oh, that's very nice.
What's ahead, Margie?
For
you.
Journalism? For me?
Well, for you, yeah.
Oh, for me. Well, I feel like I have always about 15 different things to be thinking about between work and what I'm doing outside of work, and now I'm going to just do one thing at a time.
Nothing in particular that you want to do, you've always wanted to do, that you'll not have time
well,
to do?
Well, I am doing a number of things that I'll do more of. One is taking care of and visiting with my grandchildren. I'm a rower. We can't row now because the boathouse is flooded, but I'm going to do more of that. And reading things, long-form things that I really don't have time to do now. I have an ever-expanding list of things that I want to do.
Well, let's hope you have many, many years, Margie Freivogel, to do them all and to think of new things that you'll want to do as well. It's been a great pleasure having you here today.
Thanks so much,
Thank you, Margie
Freivogel. Great working with you.
All the best to you as you turn this page and enjoy your new life and all those grandkids. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Coming up, St. Louis and its long love affair with coffee. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.